The crew all season long on WTMJ. It's Brewers Extra Innings. Now, live from American Family Field, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
All right, a lot more fun tonight. Brewers win 4-3. High quality baseball game here in American Family Field. I'm Dom Catronio. Craig Kishon is going to join us in just a little bit. The Sal Frelick game, the bullpen game, the swing and miss game. There's a couple titles we can go with this one. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. Talking about the swing and miss, I just tweeted this. The Brewers tonight, by my count, and swing and miss usually takes a day to update on some of the sites that, like Baseball Savant and Inside Edge and that sort of thing, where they go in and just double-check all of the swings and misses. But by my count, and I've cross-checked this already, the Brewers' pitching staff induced 37 swings and misses against the Pirates. 37 whiffs. That is the most in a 9-inning game in all of baseball this year. And it ties the most for the Brewers in the pitch-tracking era, which goes back to 2008. Joe Ross was awesome. Now, there were some deep counts, and if we want to pick at some nits here, we can talk about that. But Joe Ross was awesome. He needed that rebound. He needed that sort of command with the fastball-slider combo. Even a few really good changeups in there, I thought today was a big step forward for that pitch. Furthermore, the bullpen, aside from the home run that Trevor McGill allowed, they were perfect. Seriously, that was it. Brian Hudson, two perfect innings. Elvis Peguero, man, he needed that. Perfect eighth inning. Got some help from Sal in center, of course, on the second of two great diving catches. And Miguel, yes, allowed the homer to Joe, but I mean, nine pitch, tip your cap on a fastball up and in at 97. I tip my cap to that, man. That was a heck of an at-bat by Connor Joe, who a guy has been really, really hot as of the last two, 3 weeks or so. And he's going to be, if you ask me, sorry, Rowdy, he's probably going to be the everyday first baseman moving forward for the Pirates because his offense is there. And it's a really, really, really hot, streaky bat right now for the Pirates. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about the Brew Crew. Joe Ross earns the victory. The loss goes to Quinn Priester. Fifth save for McGill. The Brewers only 3 for 13 with runners in scoring position, which on the surface doesn't sound great. .231 batting average. But the home runs, and when you look at that second inning and you thought, all right, they're going to keep on going, Priester made an adjustment. And the sinker really started to get going. The ground ball out started to pop up. 9 ground ball outs for Priester out of 11 balls that were in play. So 2 fly outs and 9 ground ball outs. The sinker got going after the second inning. But the Brewers pitching staff held all 3 runs for the Pirates being scored via home run. They went 0 for 4 with runners in scoring position tonight. A couple of texts here once again, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. I think we're all going to need Sal Frelick's StatCast breakdown on the YouTube channel after that game, that one from David in Superior. Well, David, I already dove into the numbers on it, and it's not as impressive as you would think it is, and this is where StatCast doesn't always meet the eye test. In my eyes, the eye test says that was one heck of a play. StatCast disagrees. But if you ask any center fielder, again, I've said it over and over, the hardest ball to read is the one straight at you, either straight in front of you or straight behind you. And Sal made 2 great plays on balls in front and behind him. The thought of that is you have a hard time reading spin when you're in center field. Whereas when you're in the corners, you know, if you're a right-handed hit, if the right-handed hitter is up and you're playing right field, you can read the swing and you can read how the ball is flying in the air to say that ball is slicing toward the line. That's how it's generally going to work. Whereas in center field, the ball is generally barreled, and it could even be knuckling on its way over to you. And thus, StatCast sees Sal's catch in the eighth inning as, he got a bad jump, he should have caught that ball a lot easier. But you ask any center fielder, that's not an easy play in the slightest. So the catch probability doesn't take some of those qualitative stuff that certainly is hard to quantify, but ask any center fielder, like, yeah, you got to read it as quick as you can. Sal had a late break, but still his speed was able to make a tremendous catch. So that's your little StatCast taste there, David. Appreciate the text. This one from Josh in Milwaukee. Nothing like a complete game to get back into the win column. Frelick made two impact plays on both sides of the ball, and he wasn't the only defensive gem. I'm looking forward to Gasser's second start tomorrow. This one from Doug. Sal, Super Sal, looked like Superman flying through the air. Let's quit scoring in just one inning. It's way too close for comfort. I agree entirely. There, Doug. They needed to add on. There were a couple opportunities they could have added on and made this a little easier. Maybe would have even enabled Joe Ross to go back out for a sixth inning with 91 pitches under his belt. But the fact that it was still a two-run game and the meat of the order was coming up for a third time through, I'm all in on that pull, given the Brewers haven't really let him go past 90, and plus it was going to be close, and you blink and it could be a completely different game. So I really did not mind that pull in the slightest. We'll break this game down a little bit deeper with Craig Kishon here in just a moment. I've got the player of the game poll up as well on my Twitter at Dom_Cotroneo, Dom_Cotroneo. Can't even spell my own last name. I'm so excited. Sal Frelick, of course, is running away with it, as you would expect, but would love to hear your voices about your player of the game. I've got Joe Ross, Sal Frelick, and the bullpen overall of what they did tonight. Once again, I want to remind you that Brewers Extra Innings is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank. With a local Milwaukee team, Fifth Third Bank also knows how to hit it out of the park. They've been serving businesses in the area for nearly 15 years, offering industry-specific expertise and local decision-making capabilities. It's all going to help your business succeed. This is commercial banking value only Fifth Third can deliver. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, member FDIC. Take a breather. Come back with more after this. Brewers Extra Innings on 620 WTMJ.
Coming up, more Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
I'm Dominic Cotroneo. Brewers win 4-3. This series is level, one game apiece. And tomorrow will be Robert Gasser's second big league start as the Brewers look for a double series victory homestand. They went 3-1 against the Cardinals, trying to go 2-1 against the Pirates. Now we welcome in Craig Kishon. Craig, I want to start with the pitching tonight before we get into Sal, because I think with what Joe Ross did tonight and what the bullpen did tonight should not be lost. You know, only three runs allowed against the Pirates, who hung eight on the board yesterday. They helped Brian Reynolds in check. But for me, Joe Ross is a major story because he righted the ship tonight. It wasn't perfect. There are still things to work on for Joe, but to see the swing and miss come back with a vengeance tonight, I thought was really important for him moving forward.
Yeah, you know, considering the amount of pitches that he threw in kind of a short window of time, I thought, you know, that it doesn't reflect what you see, you know, when you look at the box score, that's for sure. And that means that, you know, he was still in control and on his stuff at the right times. But to do what he did, you know, I think, you know, a lot of us have been, you know, kind of wondering, you know, where is he going to fit in? How is he going to fit in? You know, that type of thing. How effective is he going to be when it's his turn out there? Team's not winning a lot of games when he's been out there, but he's done a really good job, and he's the type of guy too. You talk about all these young pitchers the Brewers are using, and he's the veteran guy that's been out for a while that's still trying to, you know, kind of reestablish his legs on the mound and reestablish his arm and you know, his endurance and everything. So it was really, really important for what he put out there in those five innings here today, and really, really meaningful to this club, and hopefully a boost of what we're going to see next time out from Joe Ross.
I mean, of his 21 swings and misses tonight, which, by the way, was one shy of his own career high, which was set back in 2021, of those 21 swings and misses, 12 of them were on his secondary pitches, his slider, his changeup, and his curveball. Furthermore, opponents went a combined 0-for-8 against those secondary pitches. He obviously has a great fastball. It carries, it sits 95, it can touch 97 like we saw tonight. But when the other stuff is quote-unquote on like we saw tonight, that's the bona fide guy that the Brewers know is deep down in there. And when he starts going 6-7 innings, he's the kind of guy that can kind of look to the bullpen and say, hey, take it easy tonight, guys. I got this one.
Yeah, those secondary pitchers are huge for him. We talked about it on our pregame show just kind of setting up what he's been building up with that changeup and how important it's been to him here on the young season, especially lately too. So, you know, for what Joe is, you know, progressing and accomplishing here right now, if he can just become a little more efficient, you're right. He's definitely going to go deeper in games and really become, you know, I just think he has the potential of really become kind of an establishing point for this starting rotation here right now, which, you know, it still remains in flux a little bit. So, you know, hopefully this thing will keep rolling for him.
I think with the bullpen, too, let's jump into Brian Hudson, because we need to start freaking out about this guy and what he continues to do for the Brewers. For one, he went multiple innings, stabilized it. Number two, he got both lefties and righties out. Number three, nothing was hit terribly hard against him. Number four, he gets swing and miss. And oh, by the way, he's left-handed. This dude is a unicorn, and it doesn't help that he's also helps that he's 6'8". But we're expecting him now to go, yeah, two innings, no runs, no big deal. Yeah, not a problem at all. That's not normal what he's doing right now. The fact that he's only allowed two runs of his own this year, this dude, just because he's not the closer doesn't mean he's not the best reliever on the team. Brian Hudson right now is the best reliever on the Brewers.
Well, I tell you, it'd be hard to argue right now, but, you know, thankfully, I will say this, there's pretty good competition right now for who the best guy is. And it's not everybody. Everyone's doing a really good job, but Hudson definitely is standing out and making a name for himself, that's for sure, which is really important. I mean, let's face it, it's, you know, Ross goes five, game is still on the line. We saw how yesterday's game, you know, became a game of its own in the last three innings between these two teams. So what he was able to do for his, you know, two innings, doing nothing but putting three strikeouts on the board. And, you know, he has been quite a storyline. There's no question about that. What the Brewers have done with developing some of these guys to become these multi-inning major threats and major shutdown pitchers that they can use pretty much at any point of the game and you know, just allow the offense either to catch up or as a Band-Aid, you know, to get to that next level of the game.
Yeah, I'm looking at what Elvis Peguero did tonight, too, and his heavy use of the slider. You talk to some pitchers, and throwing that many breaking balls can kind of help their fastball command, and he threw more sliders than fastballs tonight, and he threw a lot of them for strikes. It helped to get swing and miss, of course, too, but for Elvis to get back on track as well is quietly something very important. I mean, I asked about Yoel Piamps today to Pat Murphy. Like, how do you keep your leverage guys from rusting, given Yoel's barely been able to pitch between the bereavement leave and the lack of leverage games? Now, tonight we obviously had a leverage game. He went to Elvis, gave Yoel a day, and now he's got Yoel available for tomorrow. But if Peguero righted the ship, I'm excited to see what Yoel can do if he's in a leverage situation tomorrow.
Yeah, Peguero definitely looked good. He looked like the pitcher that, you know, we saw earlier this year and, of course, last year as well. All these guys have, you know, have their period of time where they can, you know, kind of slip out a little bit. But he's done, a good job of coming back. Tonight, really solid eighth inning. I mean, he's your setup guy. And then, of course, McGill did a good job in the ninth inning. Despite the home run, you know, these guys who are coming in and closing, you know, can't be perfect. I think we all expect that based on just the recent history of closers. But, boy, I tell you what, just the recent history of what the bullpen has done for Milwaukee. I mean, they're building quite a track record, that's for sure. And it's, and this season is included in that with the guys that we're talking about.
I mean, I see what the bullpen did again. Only one run allowed. It was the solo homer by Connor Joe. Trevor McGill got his fifth save tonight. And, oh, by the way, Devin Williams should be available in the second half of the Brewers. So it's going to get better, and you've got reinforcements coming too. J.B. Bukauskas, maybe Jacob Junis will be assigned to the bullpen in like a hybrid role. Then maybe you've got Taylor Clark going to be involved in this team too. In theory, it should keep getting better if the reinforcements arrive. So some guys have been some serious contributors so far this season. We're up against break, going to take it. Now we got to talk about Sal Frelick coming up on the other side. Sal and the offense, Yes, four runs is good. Would like to have seen more than that, but Sal had a big day. We'll talk about that coming up next here on 620 WTMJ.
On deck, more Brewers Extra Innings. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. Craig Kishon is with us as well. Brewers Extra Innings is brought to you in part by Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Of course, springtime in Wisconsin means it's time for your annual AC tune-up. Granted, you probably didn't need it on today. Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical, though, has you covered. You can save $25 on AC preventative maintenance. That currently is going to run through the end of the month. You can schedule your appointment today at Cider, SEIDER.com. Craig and I are in layers right now, but we're going to talk about Sal Frelick, who is starting to heat up a little bit. Good to see some quality contact from him. And obviously, the monkey off his back of getting his first homer of the season. Sal's not a guy that needs to hit home runs. And quite frankly, I don't want him to hit for home runs. The home runs, in my opinion, for him and guys like Bryce Terang are like happy accidents. But hey, it's cool to see a one instead of a zero next to the HR column, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to see him driving the ball, too. I know that, you know, he's a guy that, you know, has struggled out of the gates. You know, you like to see, you know, a little more gap to gap or corner to corners for Frelick. But getting that first home run, I mean, it does take the monkey off your back. There's no question about that. He's not going to go out there swinging for the fences necessarily tomorrow right away. But you know what? When he gets back in there tomorrow, he's going to feel, you know, a little bit lighter. That bat's not going to be so heavy. He had a great game today, and he's got to really be even more proud of what he did defensively for this club. I mean, he had a great catch to end the second inning, and then that kind of set the stage, hopefully for him, with that home run in the bottom half of the second, and then just a spectacular catch in that eighth inning to end the eighth inning on a big hit drive from Andrew McCutchen out there in center field on the warning track. It doesn't get any better than that, a diving catch basically over your head. I mean, just spectacular. And for whatever reason with Sal, I think that we all have a lot of trust in him that he's going to get to any ball in the outfield and make a play and make a hockey play if he needs to. We've seen that too. So he is entertaining, very entertaining game to watch on his part.
All nine players in the lineup today reached base. 8 of 9 had a hit. Ironically, the hottest guy did not get a hit, and that was Jake Bowers. He did draw a walk today, though, too. A text coming in here. Hey, what about Bryce Terang? He's been huge with us so far. His batting average is still sitting at a cool 300. A pair of two-strike hits today. He tried to steal a bag and got a couple of foul balls. He didn't get a chance to steal second base, but him hitting in front of Contreras, man, it doesn't matter if it's 0-2 or 3-2 or 3-1. Those guys are always ready to get bat onto ball. Both of them got hits tonight. Yelly got a double tonight as well and a couple of hits too. But that Terang and Contreras can set the table for guys like Yelich and Adames and when healthy Hoskins. It just makes you realize, I mean, Murph kind of walks the walk a little bit, and as he should, because he called this. He called his shot, and he believed in Terang, and we're all the ones in the media saying, like, really? And then now we're the ones eating crow because Terang's been phenomenal. Another pair of hits tonight.
Yeah, and I hope that he can keep, you know, something close to this pace. As you mentioned, he's hitting 300 after his two hits here tonight. I mean, that's well above what anybody probably expected, to be sure. However, I mean, this guy looks like he belongs right where he is right now at the top of the order. And, you know, he's spraying the ball. You know, his speed is just unbelievable. The jumps he gets on the bases is really something. He's going to score some more runs by doing that. And today he drove in a run as well, an opposite field RBI single in the second inning. But, you know, overall, it was really good to see the bottom portion of the order in that second inning just, you know, get base hit after base hit, extra base hit, you know, home run, everything happening well in that inning. And that allowed the top of the order in Terang and Yelich to kind of, finish the deal in that second inning and cap off the final two runs by driving him in. So you know, we haven't seen an inning like that in a while, which was really good here tonight, where everyone seems to, you know, have a hand in it.
And the one flaw, the one knock on tonight is that that was the only inning. There was no
right.
else. There was no other bump aside from that inning. Of course, Sal hit the two-run homer to start the frame, and it really opened the floodgates just for that inning. Would have liked to see them add on a few more runs to make it a little bit easier down the stretch in this one. But as we're talking about the offense here, and before we let you go, Craig, I mean, Rhys Hoskins' news is a bummer, and it's a flat-out bummer. In case you missed it, he is placed on the injured list, 10-day injured list. It's probably going to be longer than that, with a strained right hamstring. It happened in last night's game. Doesn't sound like it's overly severe. There's kind of conflicting reports, even from within the Brewers. The point is, it's a hamstring. He's a big dude. He generates a lot of power from his lower half. Get it right the first time. Hamstrings linger. I don't want this one to linger with Rhys Hoskins.
No, we're right in the middle of May. So let's just say, you know, if you could play doctor, and this is nothing coming out of the Brewers clubhouse, but I mean, I think realistically, you just have to say, let's give this a month, because you don't need to rush him back at this point. You do have some depth, but you do need him in the lineup. But here's the thing, Dom, if Rhys Hoskins isn't 100%, then he's not going to be Rhys Hoskins. He's not going to be the guy you signed. He's not going to be the guy that's, you know, able to do what we've seen up until now. And then some. I think he was just getting, you know, cranked up. There was more in the tank when it came to production for Rhys that we haven't seen just yet, but I think he was starting to warm up pretty good. So that's what makes this injury unfortunate, coupled with the fact that Ellis had been out for a month already and they only got to play together for a few games before, you know, now Hoskins exit with that injury. So keep your depth. You know, keep guys rotating through. You brought up the point that Murph make sure that he keeps guys fresh. You know, nobody sits for too long on the bench. We're going to see that from a DH role or whoever man's first base. They have some options. And just get Hoskins healthy to 100% before he goes back out there.
I mean, I'm looking at it now. Hoskins, Yelich, Adamas, Contreras, all of those guys, they have only been in the same lineup all together for a total of 14 games. And tonight is game 42.
Yeah.
The main core, Contreras, Yelich, Hoskins, Adamas, the four middle part of the order, they have been in the same lineup for just 14 of 42 games, and this team's in first place. They've handled it so far. They're going to have to keep handling without Rhys. And man, this could be a real team to just remember, hey, if you let them hang around the end of the first half, they're going to make you pay in the second half when, in theory, they're totally healthy when guys like Garrett Mitchell are back, Devin Williams are back, Jacob Junis is back. This team, I'm liking what I'm seeing right now, Craig. I'm starting to believe again.
Well, hey, man, I mean, you know, look where they are. They're still in first place. I know some people, you know, don't look at that and don't care, but my thing is this: they've been at the top of their division pretty much since opening day, and you know we're starting to see where other teams are falling, not only in place in the Central Division, but elsewhere around baseball. We're starting to see who the better teams are right now. That the start of the season, the fluke stuff, all that's over with now, and this team has been nearer at the top the entire time. So kudos to the depth and the belief and the commitment that these guys have right now. And tonight was a great example of that.
All right. Craig Kishon joining us here on WTMJ. You get to enjoy a few days off from our program. Thanks as always, Craig. And sleep fast. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning.
Oh, you got it, Tom.
All right, Craig Kishon on WTMJ. A couple other texts I want to address. That's coming up next. Pat Murphy a little bit later as well on 620 WTMJ.
Coming up, more Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers win 4-3. A couple of questions that have rolled in here. Austin from Poinette, how long until Abner Uribe is back in the majors? It's a good question. a while. Remember, when he comes back, he is going to have to serve his six-game suspension from the fight against the Rays. So you want to do that at a time where you can absorb having one less guy in your bullpen. So, you know, naturally my mind wanders to all-star break time just because, you know, maybe you serve the suspension for the first three games leading, or the last three games of the first half, enjoy the all-star break, get all the arms refreshed, and then the last three games coming out of the all-star break, and then he served. Because the caveat of being a suspended player on your active roster, you don't get to replace him. You got to carry 25. It's like soccer, you know, with a red card and you've been sent off, you're playing with 10 men. So you are playing with a man down, so they have to time it with that sort of thing. He's made a handful of appearances so far in AAA this year. Four innings, two walks, two hit batters. Don't love that. Five strikeouts, overpowering guys. But I think Brewers brass in the front office want to see him do this for an extended period of time in Nashville, prove that he's got the headspace ready to go with, you know, adversity comes his way, or maybe a call doesn't go his way, that he's able to lock it back in and get things going in the right direction. Another text here asking about the Hoskins injury. You know, it's a bummer, but Bowers seems to have found his stroke. We talked about it yesterday, the fact that Bowers had been hitting nearly 500 since he switched to a toe tap last Tuesday against the Royals, and he's been a different hitter. He whiffed a couple of times on it, but one of those whiffs was like a 3-0 green like daddy hack, you know, where it's just like you swing as hard as you can and hope you hit it. I'm excited because he's going to kind of have to play every day, and I wonder what the Brewers are going to do tomorrow, given there's a lot at hand tomorrow. They don't have a traditional backup first baseman, backup catcher, obviously. So you think about it, generally speaking, the day game finale of a series is the day you would give your primary catcher the day off. Now, the Brewers' primary catcher, William Contreras, refuses to come out of the lineup, so I imagine he would be the designated hitter tomorrow if they want to at least get him off his quote-unquote feet while catching. So then that would mean Gary would be behind the plate, which is why it's so important that Owen Miller was called up today in the corresponding move for Rhys Hoskins. So there's a right-handed first baseman, because I don't know if Jake Bauer is going to get a start against a left-handed starter tomorrow and Martin Perez. So there's a little bit of a puzzle right there when you're facing a lefty. And furthermore, William hasn't missed a day this year, and I don't know when he's going to get a day off, but I thought it would have been maybe tomorrow if the Brewers had already won this series, but they haven't. So I imagine he's going to be the DH tomorrow. Gary will be behind the plate for Robert Gasser, and then you'll see Owen Miller, I would imagine, at first base. So how does Robert react to a new catcher catching him who we barely got to know at the end of spring training? Now, that's not like it's a, oh my gosh, how could the Brewers do this? No, it's just like a, hey, something to monitor. Gasser throws a lot of breaking balls. Let's see how Gary does receiving him tomorrow. And this is me assuming that it's going to be Gary tomorrow. Another question here about the outfield. What's going to happen when Mitchell is back with Sal and Blake? With Sal showing today that he can play center field, and Garrett, a primary center fielder, I think Blake Perkins would be the odd man out in that situation. However, one of the things that they could do as well is keep Blake as the fourth outfielder because he's a switch hitter, and then the odd man out could be Churio, could be Sal, but I don't think it would be either one of those guys. I still think it would be Blake Perkins, given he is the depth, and then the Brewers have to decide, okay, is Churio going to be better suited playing every 2-3 days and making sure he keep confidence up? And does Mitchell get days off against lefties? Does both Sal and Mitchell get days off against lefties? So these are all things that are on the way. Sal's supposed to get the cast off coming up next, I think, 10 days or so, and then he can resume full baseball activities. He'll need a rehab assignment, and he's not even eligible to come off the injured list until technically the end of the month. I'm just double checking my game notes here to make sure I get this date right. So I will double check those notes. We will take a breather and hear from the manager, Pat Murphy, as the Brewers win by a final of 4-3 tonight. We'll hear from Murph coming up after the break on 620 WTMJ.
On deck, more Brewers Extra Innings. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. A few more segments here on the program. We got Pat Murphy in this segment, highlights in the next one, and then a preview of tomorrow. I'm Dom Catronio. Also, thanks again to Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Don't forget about that preventative AC tune-up. You can save $25 on your checkup right now at Sider, Sider.com. Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical, offering AC tune-ups. $25 off. Come check it out. It's about to get warm, I promise. It's about to get warm, even though it didn't feel like it today. To wrap up the previous segment, Garrett Mitchell is eligible to come off the injured list on May 24th. Now, that's obviously in 10 days, and he's still wearing the cast. He is obviously not going to be activated in the next 10 days or on that 10th day. And thing to keep in mind, the Brewers roster, at least 40-man roster, that is full. They're at a full 40 right now. And when you're on the 60-day IL, you are obviously temporarily off the roster for that time. When it comes to what do the Brewers do with their 40-man, you know, then you're looking at some of the guys that maybe, you know, haven't really seen much of this year. Vinny Capra, Chris Roller. You've got Kevin Hergett still on the 40-man who's down in AAA right now. So those are options, or not options, I should say, but things to figure out as some of these key players are going to return. Like Jacob Junis is on the 60-day IL with his shoulder impingement. He's been ramping up his throwing program as of late. Junis is eligible to come off on June 2nd. J.B. Bukauskas is on the 60-day. He's eligible to come off in June as well, but he's going to just start playing catch next week. They've been taking it very, very slow with him. That's just your little injury corner update. Pat Murphy was certainly in a good mood today after a fun 4-3 victory. Here's what he had to say to the media this evening.
And we just mentioned that. It makes me smile because that's the kid that the Brewers drafted whatever years ago in the first round. That's the kid. I mean, he's got the it factor, and we've thrown a lot at him since he's been here. And but you know, he's got that. You know. Really, really happy for him.
He's been kind of going through it a little bit this season. How do you think he's responded to that? And has he been able to keep his...
He's young. You know, remember how young he is and then think about trying to play in the big leagues. And it's not just he's not just physically gifted, you know. And there's a lot. We've thrown a lot at him. And we trust him. And... you know, it's only 40-some games in. Last year, I don't know how many games he played, but he had all sorts of physical ailments going on, and we kind of took him out of necessity, and he played in some big games, so it was good, but it wasn't, you know, he wasn't healthy 100%. And now we wore him out a little bit in spring training, and now he's kind of settling in. So I'm happy for him.
You only get to see limited bits of him. You were in the clubhouse before and after games, but he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who gets flustered or, you know, hangs his head or needs to be picked up. He seems like a pretty confident guy.
He's a really good competitor, you know, and he's not going to back off. He's going to keep coming at you. He's never going to tell you he can't play. He's never going to tell you when he's hurt. He's not going to – he's an old-school mentality that way. Sometimes that works to his detriment. I think it hurt him last year because I don't think he was healthy and tried to mask it because he wanted to be here so bad. But, yeah, I mean, had a great ball game. That 0-2 to ball four and steal a base, yeah, it was great.
About a swing and miss for Joe tonight. What did you see from him stuff-wise?
Yeah, it runs around up there at the top, you know what I mean? And you got to remember Joe Ross was – a very successful major league pitcher, whenever that was back in the day, you know, and he's endured some stuff. So he's super motivated to get all that back, and it's trending in that direction. You know, last outing, he got a little tired early. We don't really know exactly what it was, but he got a little tired early, didn't feel himself, and then that was in Kansas City. And then we were kind of quite cautious today. And then he went out and probably could have kept going. If not for that bit of fatigue that outing before, we might have let him go back out there for the sixth. But Hudson again, you know, we don't make too big of a deal of him, but He's been unbelievable, you know. And Piguero today, that's as good as he's looked in a while. That was sharp.
Murph, with Brian, just for as many multi-inning appearances.
Who's Brian?
Rock Hudson.
Okay, Rock. I speak my language, so.
Rock. Big lefty.
Big lefty.
6'8". The multi-inning appearances for him, what is that mean to, how valuable is that?
Yep.
As you're mapping out the last couple innings of the games and, you know, what that does for the rest of the group.
Yeah, it's tremendous. You know, I mean, he fills a gap there. You know, when we lost Devin early on, we realized, okay, this bullpen's got some nice pieces to it, but we gotta piece this together somehow. And that's a big loss when you lose Devin. And Rock has been instrumental in us piecing it together, man. He gives us multiple innings. At times, he can give us one. We're working on his recovery right now so we can get him back sooner, but he's on track for a heavy workload.
Brian Hudson has been phenomenal. I mean, the heavy workload is one thing. I had pulled up the numbers here across baseball, how he compares to other relievers that have thrown at least 20 innings this season. It's ridiculous. I mean, he's right there. He's got a sub-1 ERA. Like, just listen to that sentence. A sub-1 ERA out of the bullpen, 24 and a third innings. He's allowed 2 earned runs this season. 2 earned runs in 24 and a third innings. Now, of all the other guys with a sub-1 ERA, he's got the most innings. Furthermore, he's one of the only non-closers on this list, too, that have thrown at least 20 innings and have a sub-1 ERA. The other guys, Reed Garrett, who's off to a fantastic start this year with the Mets. He's been ridiculous. You've also got Emmanuel Clase. No surprise there. You've also got Dylan Floro with the Marlins, who is going to be certainly, or Nationals now, not the Marlins anymore, who is certainly going to be eyed by a few teams coming up this trade deadline. But Floro has been fantastic. Then you've got Rock Hudson at 24 and a third innings with a .74 ERA. All right, enough about me. Let's hear about the highlights. That's coming up next on 620 WTMJ.
On deck, more Brewers Extra Innings. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ. Ready for this?
Get up!
This?
Get up!
And this?
Get out of here! Go!
Time for tonight's highlights. Here's Dominic Catronio.
All right, Brewers looking to level the series of this 3-game set with the Pirates. Joe Ross getting the ball against Quinn Priester. Ross came out guns blazing with a couple of strikeouts in the first inning and a couple of strikeouts in the second inning. And the Brewers got some help, well, gave some help to Joe Ross with their defense. And the man that little do we know would have a huge night, Sal Frelick, in the second.
2-2 pitch. This is lined into center. Frelick coming in. Diving. Did he make the catch? He did. Wow, Sal Frelick. That is a tough play coming right at you on a line. He sold out for it. Went into a dive and caught that ball right before it hit the grass.
Lane Grindle's call here on WTMJ, and it's a risky one, but he made the play this time. Then in the bottom of the second, as it tends to happen, Sal was due up. After a one-out double from Joey Ortiz, Frelick finally going yard. Guess the highlight didn't fire. We'll get it right. But he went yard, first on of the year, as the Brewers took a 2-0 lead. That would really spark a rally for the crew. Oliver Dunn would pull a single through the right side. Then Jackson Churio would single up the middle. That put runners on the corners for Bryce Terang. Looks like none of our highlights are firing right now, but we're going to keep trying to roll through it here. As in that second inning, after Bryce Terang hits an RBI single to make it 3-0 at the time, Brewers, Contreras popped out, so you're thinking, oh no, is the inning going to end here? Christian Yelich will be next up at the plate. Yelly would get the job done.
Yelich, a line drive back up the middle and into center field for a base hit. Churio will score. Terang, first to third. And the Brewers still have him on the corners. It's 4-0 Milwaukee.
So 4 runs in the frame on 6 hits. And little did we know, that would be all that they would score for the rest of the game. The Brewers, though, had Joe Ross on the mound, and he was fantastic, getting ahead of hitters. He had to throw a lot of pitches, though, a few too many full counts, if you ask him. But at the end of the day, the only blemish against him was a two-run homer by Nick Gonzalez. Five strong frames, six strikeouts, and 21 whiffs. That was a new season high for him. However, it was still a tight ball game. 4-2, needed every single great play from the defense. The bullpen was in charge now. In the sixth inning, Brian Hudson got a pair of strikeouts to Brian Reynolds and O'Neill Cruz. Then it was Connor Joe at the plate.
2-2 pitch. Chopper, left side of the infield. It's Terang who fields it, throws across his body to first in time. Wow! That ball was behind the mound and to the left of the second base bag, and Terang came all the way across, fielded it, and threw across his body and gets Connor Joe for the last out in the inning.
Great call once again by Lane. In the seventh inning, Hudson returned for another 1-2-3 inning. In the eighth, it was Elvis Peguero trying to get back on the saddle. He's had a rough few games, and here he gets a strikeout swinging on a slider to Triolo, a strikeout swinging on a slider to Taylor. He got ahead of Andrew McCutchen 0-2. Of course, Kutch battled. And on the eighth pitch of the at-bat, the highlight of the night.
2-2 pitch. Line drive out to center. Back on it is Frelick. Still back onto the edge of the line. Track, a diving catch by Super Sal. Wow! Elvis Peguero just pointing out to him. You won't see a better catch this year in center field. Full extension, sliding on the warning track, a standing ovation at American Family Field.
Woo-wee. It was one heck of a play for Sal Frelick, to say the least. Trevor McGill would allow a homer in the ninth, but that was all. He struck out a pair as well as the Brewers' pitching staff combined for 37 whiffs against the Pirates tonight. That is matching a Brewers 9-inning game record in the pitch tracking era. So it was all about the swing and miss tonight as the Brewers racked up 13 strikeouts against the Buccos, and they'll try to win the series tomorrow with the hand of Robert Gasser. We'll preview that coming up next on 620 WTMJ.
Coming up, more Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
All right, final segment here as we get ready to say goodbye. Tomorrow's a big day for the Brewers, not just for a series victory, but what it can do for the standings and specifically for the rest of the Central Division. Now, today the Cubs lost to the Braves, but the Brewers obviously are still going to have to face the Braves too and the Dodgers, and the Brewers haven't faced the Dodgers yet either. But the Brewers are now up to the second, are a game and a half up on the Cubs. 25-17, 24-19. We don't actually care about the record given it is so early, but the fact that the rest of the division is under 500 is significant because, remember, the tiebreakers are how you do head-to-head is the first tiebreaker against the team that you're tied with. The second tiebreaker is how you did against everybody else in the division. And the fact that the Brewers have a chance tomorrow with a victory to be already 13-7, six games over 500 against everybody else in their division, having only lost one series this year, that to the Cubs, and then they're the next homestand for the Brewers, four games with the Cubs, three with the White Sox. You know, if you can manage to win that series, you're really going to be in the driver's seat. If you split it, you're A-OK with that too. So tomorrow can be an opportunity to really make sure to make this a two-horse race for as long as possible. Now, the Cardinals have been showing signs of life. They are out west tonight taking on the Angels, and they're in a slugfest despite Sonny Gray starting on the mound. It's 7-5 at the time of recording here with the Cardinals in the lead. So we're not ready to call them dead yet, but they're pretty darn close. They need to get something going. Cincinnati needs to get something going ASAP. As Cincinnati's taking on the Diamondbacks, they have the lead 6-2 tonight. They lost on a walk-off last night. They have won just once in their last 10 games, and their only series in the Central is head-to-head with the Brewers, the series that they lost, that they need to make up a doubleheader later on in the season. So just getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but just saying, hey, let's win another series against a Central opponent tomorrow. It'll be a southpaw battle. Martin Perez against Robert Gasser. Gasser was fantastic, throwing a majority of breaking balls in his first start. That was against the Cardinals this past Friday night. excited to see what he can do for the Act 2 of Gasser, who you would hope is going to stick around for a long while. Perez, in his first year in Pittsburgh, this will be his ninth start tomorrow. Pitches to contact. We've seen plenty of Martin Perez in the American League. This is his first time venturing over to the senior circuit now. 1-2 record, 3.60 ERA, not many strikeouts. Opponents hitting .281 off of him. He is kind of strayed from his great form that he had with the Rangers in 2022. And now back with the Pirates here. And he's a southpaw. The Brewers have barely seen any lefties this season. Their record against lefties is just a minuscule. I think it's six games. 3-3 against lefties this year, so keep that in mind ahead of tomorrow's game. Early game, get your bagel, get your coffee, get ready to go. A 12:10 first pitch. Coverage will begin at 11:35 right here on 620 WTMJ. No post-game show tomorrow. We'll go straight into drive time programming. Thursday is an off day. I've got Brewers Weekly Thursday night, and then we are back after the Houston series games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We've got post-game shows for you right here on WTMJ as well. So that's going to do it for this episode tonight. Thank you to everybody who hung out and listened in. My thanks to our producer, Max Meyerson, and my thanks to Craig Kishon for joining as well. I'm Dom Catronio. Brewers win 4-3. Until next time, keep on swinging.